And the first hour of the show, my guest has been researching the Disclosure Project. Now, a lot of people have been talking about this on various websites around the world, and in particular on our friends at ATS, AboveTopSecret.com, who are also joining us this evening. You can find out a little bit about the Disclosure Project at www.disclosureproject. Oh, I can't even talk tonight. You know, I'm not going to the dentist before a show ever again. Simple as that. www.disclosureproject.org. You can also check out seizepower.org, which is C... I can't even say... You know what? I'm going to go back to bed and start this show again tonight. I am. Good night. Hello, this is Ross Hemsworth. Welcome to... I'm going to have one of those evenings. Let's try again. www.seaspower. So that's seizepower.org. Now, also he has his own website, and that is www.checktheevidence.com. And welcome to my very first guest this evening from the Disclosure Project, Andy Johnson. Andy, good evening.
Hello, Ross, and thank you very much for inviting me onto the programme, and greetings to all the listeners around the world.
Well, I just hope that you can talk better than I can this evening, Andy.
Well, I made a little slip up there, didn't I? So maybe it's just...
It must be something in the air tonight. Gremlins in the gob, as they say.
Yes, along those lines.
A few of our alien friends coming down and intercepting the programme, no doubt.
Absolutely.
So, Andy, tell us about the Disclosure Project. And bear in mind, a lot of people that are listening to the programme may not have heard anything about it. So give us the story from the beginning.
Sure. Basically, the Disclosure Project is a movement to try and disclose the truth as told in first-hand witness testimony about the UFO phenomenon, or many aspects of it. Really, the project's leader is Dr. Stephen Greer. He's been the absolute driving engine behind it. And in 1993, he started to identify first-hand military and government witnesses to UFO-related events and projects. Now, Stephen Greer, he was an ER doctor, an emergency room doctor. So, you know, you often, if you listen to him speaking, you'll often hear him, you know, tell tales of being in the emergency room, and he kind of puts certain things in that context. So, you know, it's quite unusual to switch from emergency room, you know, doctoring to flying saucers and whatnot. But anyway, going back to the project itself, by the year 2000, what he'd done is he'd gone round and he'd interviewed 400 witnesses, and the vast majority of them were formerly in the military, or they worked in government-connected positions. So he'd actually got 400 of these testimonies, and these are people, in the main, not 100%, but in the main, they're, you know, name and serial number identified. They're not sort of... There's a few of them that have remained anonymous, but the majority of them are, you know, plainly identified. And he's basically taken all this testimony, and he's compiled it into, I think he's got a couple of different books, and he's got some DVDs and VHS videos, and you can get those through the Disclosure Project website. Now, I think, you know, some people will already be thinking, oh, well, it's just another money-making thing, you know, to sell books and videos, and it's all revolving around that. Well, actually, it doesn't all revolve around that, because significantly there's quite a lot of information that you can download for free from the website. And one of the main things which I've been showing to people, which we'll maybe talk a little bit about later on, my experiences with that, and there's the 2001 press conference video, which you can download for free. I think the whole thing, it's about 200 megabytes for the high quality version. It's about 80 or 85 megabytes for the low quality version. And this you can download for free, so it doesn't cost you a bean. And this video was a very significant event, in my opinion. This was really, when I watched this video, I just got my internet broadband link for the first time, and so because it was so big, you know, I was able to download it without any problems having the broadband link. And I watched this video and I thought, oh, well, this is pretty significant, because what happened was we've got 21 of these government people and military people, a mixture, coming to this press conference, and it's a prestigious venue in Washington, D.C., the National Press Conference Club, and they had this basically a two-hour event, May the 9th, 2001, where they basically came onto the forum and they said, I have this experience telling you that this is a genuine experience that I have. I'm prepared to testify under oath that this is what happened to me. And in quite a few cases, these witnesses presented some kind of evidence to back up their claims. For instance, the first witness on the press conference is called John Callahan, and he was a former accident and investigator for the FAA. And he recounts this experience where he was involved with investigating the UFO incident with the Japan Airlines in 1986. You know, and he gives you all the details of this in the press conference of this radar tracking, and he was involved with the follow-up to this. He didn't actually experience the event itself, but he was involved with the follow-up, because I think there was something approaching a mid-air collision. It didn't get to that point, but it was looking that way at one time, and that's why they had to, kind of put it through the accident investigation procedure for that. And he has a videotape of the radar playback which they used, and he describes this in the press conference quite clearly. And so you've got a number of witnesses describing these sorts of experiences at the press conference. And, when I watched it, I thought, well, hang on, we can't just say that these people just, didn't know what they saw, because we've got one guy, for instance, another guy, he was in charge of nuclear missiles. He was in charge of Minuteman nuclear missiles in the 1960s. And he recounts this story of he was in the capsule 60 feet underground. He's got these missiles primed and ready to fire at Moscow or wherever other Soviet targets. And he gets a call from the top side of the base. A soldier saying, "Sir, we've got an object here hovering over the top of the base here." And Captain Salas is the name of this chap who recounts this experience, and he sort of said, "Okay, right, yeah, just keep on taking the tablets." And he basically disregarded the call and didn't think it was serious. And then a few minutes later, this guard on the top side calls him back again, Captain Salas says his voice was. He was clearly very frightened, and he then says, "The object is still here, sir. It's not going away." And as Captain Salas was taking this call, he looked at the activity lights for his missiles, and he describes how they all went down into a no-go, and they became unlaunchable. That's the word that he used, and he had 18 out of about 20 missiles that he was sort of looking after.
That's amazing. Absolutely amazing.
He went into a no-go condition. And I've seen, Captain Salas, I've seen him on press conference tell this story. People can watch it. They just download the video, watch the story, make what they will of it. Of course, people might just say, well, he's making up the story. But I have a big problem with that. I mean, you look at this guy. He's been in charge of nuclear weapons. He's got the military credentials to prove that story. He also did his own research after this experience. As I say, I don't know what year he left the military. I think it was probably late 70s, early 80s, sometime like that. And after that, he went to the National Archives and he traced through the records and he found some telexes which were sent, I think somewhere in his chain of command. And these telexes do mention this incident that he was involved with, and they mention UFOs, and he's got these. And he's passed these on to Stephen Greer, and I think if you buy the book, if you download some of the material, and you can basically download these online, these documents. Mm. So
it's amazing stuff, isn't it? I mean, when you look through a lot of these things, especially with UFOs and reports of UFOs, there's always been so many people out there trying to put it down, saying, "Oh, it's just weather balloons or whatever." But more and more evidence seems to be coming forward now, doesn't it?
This is what I felt, and when I saw this, I thought, well, it's really changing, what you might perhaps call the balance of evidence, and you're getting some really quite serious-looking evidence. I mean, one of the other examples, which is, if we've got people who are interested in this, they'll probably be familiar with, is Colonel Charles Holt, his memo from the Rendlesham base, and if you look at that document, that's a very interesting document. And another of the Disclosure Project witnesses that some of the listeners might be familiar with is Larry Warren. And he, recounts in quite some detail in the Disclosure book what happened to him following the landing at Rendlesham Base.
Mm. Now, I've been up to Rendlesham myself, so I can appreciate that. Yes, yeah, I've been there and done some investigation there. Now, we've got to take a short break there, Andy, so just take a breath. You're doing really well, but take a breath for a second. We're going to have a short break. We'll be back with Andy Johnson in a few moments. If you want to check out the websites, the main website is disclosureproject.org and Andy's website, checktheevidence.com. We'll be back with Andy Johnson right after these words.
Get interactive. Email studio@nettalkradio.co.uk or text 85010. Type the word studio and then your message.
Zoinks, Scoob! I smell something weird!
It's not weird. It's Ross Hemsworth.
You're listening to Now That's Weird with Ross Hemsworth.
You are indeed. Hi, it's me, Ross Hemsworth, first hour of the show, and of course, Now That's Weird. My guest for the first hour is Andy Johnson, and you can find out a little bit more about Andy by checking out www.checktheevidence.com. He's a part of the Disclosure Project, which you can also find out more about at disclosureproject.org. And he's talking to us tonight about the growing evidence to support the fact that UFOs really exist. Andy, welcome back.
Thanks.
Hi. Now, what made you become involved with the Disclosure Project?
Well, as I say, you know, once I'd seen the sort of, I think it was the quality of the evidence that Stephen Greer had put together. And I think I should sort of make it clear to the listeners that, you know, I don't agree with everything that Stephen Greer says or everything that's in the Disclosure Project. You know, I've done bits and pieces of my own research and, you know, I don't agree with everything. But once I'd seen this video, I thought, this is a very good quality set of evidence, and I, you know, can download this onto my computer and I can put it onto a laptop and I can take it out and show people and see what sort of reaction I get, because I really felt that it was the fact that I hadn't heard about it, you know, that I came across it in May 2003, I think it was, and the press conference was filmed in May 2001. So, you know, obviously there had been that two-year gap, and I thought, well, I just haven't heard anything about this. And then I went on to do a bit of initial research about it, and I looked on the BBC website, and there was a reference on the BBC website to Disclosure Project. I think you can still find it on there. If you go into BBC News and just do a search for Disclosure Project, you'll get a page that comes up. And it just said, UFO spotters slam US cover-up. And, you know, if you listen to what some of these witnesses say, I wouldn't really call them UFO spotters. You know, it goes a bit further than that.
Yeah, it's a bit demeaning, actually, isn't it? Now, what makes the Disclosure Project different to other UFO-related groups, Andy?
Well, again, what attracted me to it was that, you know, you've got things like the Aetherius Society, and I think there's a Raelian organisation as well. And, I've come across those in the past, and I've tended to hold them at arm's length, really, because they seem to mix this sort of cultish element, and they, you know, there are certain rules and kind of sort of regulations that they kind of expect you to follow if you're going to become part of that group, really. Mm. But with the Disclosure Project, what they were saying is, here's the information. What we'd like you to do, if you're interested, is take this information and show it to people. You know, and do that really in a way which you think is, you know, appropriate, I suppose I might say. And so I was really, you know, I contacted the people there. There's a lady there called Debbie. I've never met her, but I've exchanged quite a lot of email with her over the last few years. And, you know, she basically said, okay, yeah, you know, we're very interested that you'll go out and show this video. So what I've been doing really is, most of the UFO clubs and organisations know about the Disclosure Project, so it's really just another kind of, you know, another sort of little piece in the picture. But what I've tried to do is I've tried to take it to people who haven't heard much about UFOs. You know, and I've got a little laptop, as I said, and I've got a projector as well now. I've got one of these LCD projectors, so I've taken it round to like women's coffee mornings, and I've done a couple of Probus groups. Probus are for retired business people, and you know, I've shown the video you know, just as being a speaker, a general speaker on a particular subject. And, you know, usually what I'll get is a fairly sort of neutral response overall. Some people are very interested. But inevitably I will get someone at the end who will come up and say, well, you know, I had one lady came up, for example, and she said, well, me and my daughter saw a flying saucer, and it literally flew right over our heads, you know, when we're on holiday or something like this, you know.
Now, what do you say to people who say it's all just a load of rubbish or nonsense?
Well, I think, I just say, well, look at the evidence, and do you think that if you take the press conference video, for example, and just take it at face value, you've got all these people coming up, and that each of them say, I am prepared to swear an oath before Congress that this story is true. Now, what reason would they have to make that up? You know, there's really only about three or four reasons that you can think of. You can say, well, for example, they just misunderstood what's happened to them. A lot of people tried to sort of say that to me, you know, and they say, well, they've obviously seen something and they've just misperceived that it's been it's not been what they thought it was. Or, for example, if you take the missile shutdown incident, which I think is very significant, they'll just say, well, it was obviously some unknown type of plasma energy or something like that. And I think even if you take that as a logical explanation, it still, you know, leaves quite a few unanswered questions. And also, when you research that particular one again, you find that episode was repeated over and over again. You know, when this thing comes over the missile silo and the missile shut down and then it leaves, you know, then that seems to be intelligent behaviour.
Exactly. This is it, isn't it?
You really phrase it in other terms. So I think it really comes down to a question of looking at the evidence, thinking about it, deciding whether you think these people are competent observers, and if they're in the military, you know, you must surely have a higher probability of them being trained observers, because, you know, that's what military activity does. You know, that's what they do. They're trained to observe. And this is one of the things that Lord Hill Norton said. He's also a Disclosure Project witness, Lord Peter Hill Norton. You know, he said these are military people. They're trained to observe. So you have to really, I think, put the evidence that they give a notch or two higher, you know, in significance.
Of course. Now, with the Disclosure Project, obviously the whole idea behind this is to get materials and documents out into the open that are believed to be hidden. Now, what is the Disclosure Project doing to campaign for these changes?
Well, they're really asking people like you and like the other listeners who look at the evidence and think that it's significant to contact political representatives. I mean, I went to see my local MP, Liz Blackman, and I made an appointment through the surgery. This was probably almost 3 years ago now I did this. You know, and I took her a small selection of the documents, and I showed her a portion of the video. You know, and don't get me wrong, I almost felt a bit silly doing this. But, you know, I did a bit of research on Liz Blackman, and she's she was at one time, I don't know whether she still is, the secretary to Jeff Hoon, who's the defence secretary. You know, and I sort of went along thinking, well, if we've got this reputable Captain Salas from the 60s saying that something has come into the airspace, shut down the nuclear missiles, this is surely of defence significance, and that's exactly what Lord Hill Norton said. You know, he said that this thing landing outside Rendlesham, that's of defence significance. But if you look at the official MOD reports, it says, you know, there was no defence significance to that incident.
Now, the funny thing is, we've had Nick Pope on the show since, and Nick, of course, was the original investigator for the British government on UFO incidents, and he actually related to the Rendlesham landing, saying that he believed it to be a UFO, and although starting as a sceptic, is now convinced that UFOs exist. Now, this is a guy that was running, if you like, the British X-Files. Now, when the actual landing took place, he wasn't in that position, if I remember rightly. It was something he did a lot of investigation of afterwards. But certainly from the statements he saw and the witnesses he spoke to, he was in no doubt whatsoever.
Well, this is it. And, I mean, again, you look at the evidence for the case, and you look at the witness testimonies, and you look at things like the radar evidence – And there was a very good documentary broadcast on the Sci-Fi Channel, which was called UFO Invasion Rendlesham. And that actually brought forward a little bit of new evidence, because one of the, talking specifically about the Rendlesham case, which is part of, is, it is part of the Disclosure Project, as I say, Larry Warren is a witness and he talks about the Rendlesham case. And they revealed on this documentary, you know, there's been this, as you, if you've researched this yourself, you know, there's this story that Vince Thirkettle, he said that they saw the lighthouse. You know, so basically that line of thoughts is, well, you've got military people on a nuclear armed base who can't identify a lighthouse that's been there.
Exactly.
They work there. Not only that, on this documentary, they took Charles Holt back to Rendlesham Forest and he took them to the clearing where he saw something come down. And it turns out that that was a different clearing to the one where Jim Peniston saw the object. So there were actually two landing sites. And they, you know, Colonel Holt and Jim Peniston mutually discovered that when they were filming the documentary. And that was what Larry Warren said in his witness statement, that he landed in two different places. And that the second place where it landed, you can't even see the lighthouse from there. It's not visible. So they can't have seen that.
This is it. That just doesn't add up at all. And I mean, when I first saw the documentary and they were talking about the lighthouse, I couldn't help but laugh. I thought that's probably one of the poorest excuses I've ever come across. The interesting thing, Andy, when we were talking to Nick, was Nick said with the sightings that he'd registered over so many years, the majority of them were near military sites. And he said that has to be strategic and tactical, and he would not rule out an imminent alien invasion. And when Lionel Fanthorpe came on the show recently from Bufora, Lionel was saying that he thinks there's a greater chance of an alien invasion than there is of global warming. What do you make of that?
Well, I don't go along with the idea of alien invasion. I tend to agree with Stephen Greer's opinion on this, because if you take the idea of an alien invasion, then they could have done this a long time ago, before, for example, we have had the nuclear weapons capability. Now, if, for example, they wanted to invade us, we've got the instance, say, going back to the Captain Salas case and trying to sort of extend that logically, if you take it that that was an intelligently controlled object coming from outside, you know, the Earth, shutting down the missiles, then there's nothing to stop them doing that and going around all the installations in the Earth and basically neutralizing all the facilities, in my opinion. They could do that like that, but they don't appear to have done that, or if they have, we haven't found out about it. And if they wanted to come and invade us, then why didn't they do it, say, you know, in 1930, you know, when we didn't have a nuclear weapons capability?
What I would say in answer to that, obviously, was it may well have been that they've been watching for years, but it's only now they've decided to take that step, if, of course, there was any truth in it at all.
Well, again, I don't really agree with this, because I tend to agree with the view, you know, this is, again, where you can't really base the view on evidence as such. You can only take the evidence so far, you know, and then I think you're forming kind of a, you know, worldview from that.
Of course.
What I think is that once a race progresses beyond a certain level of intelligence, then really they become more spiritual, and therefore they try and support and encourage other races rather than invade them.
Mm. Yeah, that's fair enough. Okay, we're just moving back to the Disclosure Project for a second. Why do you think it's particularly important for people to know about the Disclosure Project?
Well, I think one of the main things which comes out of this, I mean, a lot of people have asked me at these meetings that I've given. I've probably done about 10 or 12, you know, not a huge number, but I'd say a reasonably significant number. And they say, well, why is it being covered up? Why the cover-up? Why don't they just tell us? And I think one of the reasons, really, is the way I look at this now, is if you accept that we've got these craft coming from somewhere else, another planet, basically. Some people think they come from another dimension. I don't have a problem with that. Some people think they're time travelers. I don't have a problem with that either. But whatever, they're not, you know, they're not our technology. So you then have to sit there, and once you realize and think, well, okay, they are coming here, the real physical objects, they're coming to our skies. So how are they powered then? How are they powered? What powers them? And so you then have to think, well, they must use some kind of different energy system. They're not going to be running on coal or gas. I suppose there's a vague possibility they might have some kind of nuclear propulsion. But as I understand it, And I believe that in the other research that I've done, and if you look at some of the research of Nick Cook, for example, in his book for the Hunt for Zero Point, that they do use some kind of zero-point energy technology. And you mentioned at the beginning of the show there, this other site that Stephen Greer's got called Seas Power, S-E-A-S-P-O-W-E-R, power.com. And that is really kind of like the flip side of some of the disclosure project, because some of the witnesses talk about reverse engineering this ET technology. And this is, I think, one of the big reasons why this has been covered up, because these craft have got advanced energy systems which can basically extract energy from what's called the zero-point field, vacuum energy. And I also think there is a lot of good evidence that we as human beings, nothing to do with extraterrestrials or UFOs, have started to tap into this zero-point field. And this is, for example, where it ties in with cold fusion. And I think that some of the working cold fusion experiments, people think that cold fusion was debunked and, you know, it doesn't exist. Well, that's not actually correct. If you go onto a website called www.lenr-canr.org, that will give you the information on hundreds of reproduced experiments for cold fusion. And I think that is tapping into the zero point field where we can get limitless energy for nothing.
Now, do you think, because there was a lot of stories after the Roswell incident about alien technology being brought in here on Earth, and certainly through the 60s and 70s, and if you look at the things like the internet, mobile phones, the DVDs, the modern technology has gone forward so fast in the last couple of decades compared to before that. Now, do you think that maybe the same thing applies here?
Well, I find that quite a tricky topic. I have looked into it a bit. For example, I think the most famous story is the story of the invention of the transistor. There's various websites that show that AT&T were given certain information, which that, you know, then helped them develop the first transistor. And if you try and go back and find, I think it was William Shockley, I think was his name, who invented the transistor. Apparently, if you go and try and find his lab notes for how he came up with the transistor, you won't find them. Mm. But there's a lot of controversy over this story, and some people say that this is a bit of disinformation that's being put in. So I think it's quite likely that we've had some leakage of technology from reverse engineered equipment, but I'm not sure how much there is. Now, again, another of the books is The Day After Roswell by Colonel Corso, and Colonel Corso has also contributed to the Disclosure Project. And, you know, I'm pretty well convinced by his story. He seems to be telling the truth. And this brings me on to another little sort of add-on here with the statements of Paul Hellyer, who came out on September the 25th last year and said UFOs are real, and he said this in public at the Toronto conference. And they're as real as the aircraft that fly over your head, etc. So, you know, we've got these people coming out and saying these things now. He's a former Canadian defence minister, and he's quoting Colonel Corso, and he said that he checked with his own military contacts to verify Corso's contacts and what they said.
We've got a funny noise coming behind you there. I don't know what it is, but it sounded like someone was running the tap behind you.
Oh, I can't hear anything here. It must be my free energy device firing up.
It must well be. Okay, we're going to take another short break, and we're going to be back with Andy right after the break. If you want to check out the websites, it's disclosureproject.org and his own website, checktheevidence.com. Check those out, and we'll be back right after these words.
You saw.
Yes, welcome back. You're in the first hour of Now That's Weird. My name's Ross Hemsworth, and I'm joined in this first hour by Andy Johnson from the Disclosure Project. Andy, welcome back.
Hi.
It's a chance for you to get a breath there with the break. Now, are there any other aspects you'd like to talk about the Disclosure Project, which you think are important and people should know?
Well, again, I think one of the main things really is to look at the energy side and what that means. I think also the way I view it is part of a wider picture, and there's really perhaps a couple of other things which the Disclosure Project leads you towards. The first of which I start with when I do these presentations. Now, this is something which is, you know, recorded history. And I'll read this out because it's quite a surprising statement if you haven't heard it before. And I will just read this out. It's about take about half a minute to read it. And this is the one of the main quotations in the Disclosure Project material, and it says, "In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defence with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper together." Now, do you know who said that?
No idea.
That was President Dwight Eisenhower, and he said that in his leaving address in 1961.
Mm.
Now, you know, you can, that is, there's no question that he said that. It's recorded history. You know, you can look at it in all the history books and whatnot. Of course, the thing that is open is, what does it mean? What is the interpretation of that? And the interpretation that, looking at the evidence through Disclosure Project that Stephen Greer and myself place on that, is that Eisenhower had seen how the black world had begun. In other words, what I mean by the black world is that black projects, what are called USATs, unacknowledged special access projects, had grown in their power, and that the combination of the military and the private sector forming like this entity, the military-industrial complex, had taken over the UFO issue, and all the important aspects of it were basically made secret.
Mm.
And this was a gradual process. It really, I think it started, as Richard Dolan points out, with the formation of the National Security Council, which was an act in, I think, 1947. Coincidentally, soon after the Roswell crash, President Truman signed this act to form the National Security Council, which then, I think, eventually became the NSA, the National Security Agency. So the level of secrecy is huge, and you've got these vast compartmentalized projects. So this is important for people to realize, I think, that if you follow the evidence, these black projects do exist, they're real. And again, if I've mentioned Nick Cook, his book, The Hunt for Zero Point, talks about some of these black projects as well. Not to the level that Stephen Greer does, but it goes into the same sort of territory.
Mm. It's strange, isn't it? I mean, the more I hear about these things, I used to be a total skeptic to UFOs and such like, and the more I'm hearing about it, the more I think the evidence is there to be seen, isn't it?
Well, this is it. You know, this is what I found. And I think, you know, because we now live in the internet age, and, you know, one of the other things that Stephen Greer talks about, is, which I'll maybe just spend the last few minutes talking about, is the consciousness aspects of this, which some of the listeners might be familiar with. And really, that's the sort of territory that you end up getting into with this. And he describes something called the universal mind.
Mm.
And I tend to feel, you know, you can go onto Google or some equivalent search engine now, type a few keywords, and you can usually get a whole raft of pages about whatever it is you're looking for. You know, and I think, well, now it's like you're plugged into this universal mind. Once you've got a broadband connection and you've got access to all this audio and video and stuff, and you can ask a question, and you can get a whole set of answers, and it's up to you then to decide, you know, which one is the right one, or which, you know, set is the right set, so to speak.
Now, the funny thing is, you talk there about the universal mind. We've had quite a few discussions on this program about the universal consciousness and the fact that it soaks up information and gives out information. So are we on the same parallel line there with our thoughts on that?
Well, I think so, yes, because, again, what Stephen Greer has got involved with, I mean, initially when I got involved with the Disclosure Project, I was very sceptical about this other thing which he is involved with, which is called CSETI. And again, I think it's CSETI.org. I don't think I mentioned that in the information that I sent. But CSETI.org is really this, you know, it's kind of like the logical progression from the Disclosure Project, because if you look at the Disclosure Project material and you end up deciding, as I have, that these things are real, the UFOs are real, there are things coming here from other planets, they've landed, they've been shot down, this is what some of the testimony says, you know, the things have been retrieved, not just at Roswell, there's been quite a few other incidents which are disclosed in various levels of detail in the Disclosure Project material. If you accept that that is real, and it's not just people making up stories to make money or whatever, we are being visited. Perhaps we ought to move from this mode of passive observing to active communication. And that's what Stephen Greer is trying to do with his CSETI initiative. And as I say, I was quite sceptical about this at first. But it's basically the idea that you move and you try and communicate with these things. And you use, for example, signaling protocols with lights. And going back a few years for myself, I haven't actually done this. I've not really tried this myself properly yet. But I distinctly remember, I don't know if you know a chap called Tony Dodd. Have you ever heard of
him? I've heard the name, yeah.
And I got to meet him over 20 years ago, you know, he told me about some of his experiences. One of which, when he was out on the moorland in Yorkshire somewhere, you know, on his night duty, driving around. And he'd seen quite a lot of objects, you know, during his night duty. And one time he said this object flew over and he got his torch out. And as it flew over, he flashed at it and it passed overhead, came round, and it flashed back at him with the same pattern. So this was, you know, this was him communicating with that object. And this is what Stephen Greer has tried to do with the CSETI project. He's set up a set of protocols to signal to these things. But he also does it, and this again ties in with the consciousness where you have to try and get yourself into a meditative state while you're doing this so that you're in a, you know, a peaceful frame of mind, etc. And you can open yourself then to other forms of communication, might we say, and see what happens.
Now, one thing I've got to ask you is, obviously the Disclosure Project has a pedigree, but it seems to have failed to make a significant impact on anyone or anything. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think really there's a number of reasons for that. One is that it's a UFO thing, and as soon as people see UFO somewhere within it, they can switch off. So your ordinary person has really been exposed to the UFO issue through science fiction films or very basic news stories which don't go into a lot of depth, and therefore they kind of, you know, there's a subconscious assumption that because it's not in the news, it can't be important. So that's one reason. And another reason is that, you know, people have their own personal problems, they're wrapped up with their own affairs, that's another thing, and they also have their own interests, they like to watch, you know, the regular things like football. So they just never sort of stumble into this sort of arena, and they never find out about it. So that's two reasons. And then there are other reasons. I mean, whatever evidence you present to people, they still think that, you know, it's obviously just, it's not important because there's been some mistake. People are, as I say, misperceiving things or, you know, there's been some mistake. And again, if you look at most of the elected representatives, I mean, I went to see my MP, as I mentioned previously, and I got absolutely no response from that, you know, nothing at all, which was what I expected. But I felt I had to make the effort to take that information and see what she thought of it. So, you know, I think some people don't even know how to deal with it, you know.
No, I think that's true. Now, what would you say are the biggest obstacles to disclosure and the goals of the Disclosure Project?
I think the two biggest obstacles, following on from what I last said, one is the media. I mean, the media... Really, again, there's a pretty good article on the Disclosure Project website about the media issues. And, for example, you've got these two main issues of censorship and self-censorship. In other words, the really big stories, like, for example, you know, the fact that the Rendlesham case, some of the nuclear ordnance was deactivated as a craft flew over the base. Now, Colonel Holt was reluctant to disclose this at first, but he more or less disclosed that in the last documentary that I referenced. So, you know, you don't get those sorts of stories appearing in the media, and it's obviously, you know, it's easy to see why, because if you have a disclosure in the media that some outside force can deactivate our most powerful weaponry, then that's big news. So you can see that there would be reasons for that not being allowed to be broadcast. And again, the second reason comes back to people thinking that there's nothing in the UFO subject. So if you've got some media editors or media bosses, they'll see a subject with UFO and they'll marginalise that news bulletin immediately. It'll go at the end of the news at best and it'll be trivialised. So it's a self-censorship there that they don't actually look into it to sufficient depth to see how important it is.
Yeah, no, I agree. Okay, now, just to finish off here, I mean, one of the things I'm going to ask you to do is, at some point over the weekend, if you could visit abovetopsecret.com, if you're not already a member, Andy, and sign into there, and maybe answer some questions, because I know a lot of the readers of that column are going to want answers to questions, and if you could do that, that would be great. But if you can just finish by telling us, what are the recent developments in the area of disclosure, and what can we expect to see in the coming months?
Well, I think... looking at the UFO kind of events that have happened, the biggest event I mentioned earlier was Paul Hellyer, who did this conference in Toronto in September. He gave this quite long speech. It was about 20 minutes long, about his decision to come forward and say what he said. Now, if you go onto the Check the Evidence website and go into the video section, you can download this speech in full. I was very fortunate to have a friend in Toronto who went to the conference. He filmed it on his camcorder, and it's just called Paul Hellyer. If you go onto the video link, you'll find it on there. And you can download and watch this. So I think that was very significant that he came forward as a former government minister. And he said, we've now got to try and think about getting involved in the Decade of Contact. And this is another initiative which has been put forward by Alfred Weber. So that I think is quite interesting. Hmm. And if you look at, I think it's, I can't remember the website address, but if you look up Alfred Weber and Peace in Space, I think you'll get that come up on your Google.
Fantastic. Now, just one last thing, Andy. If somebody sees a UFO and they want to actually make a report of it, how do they go about doing that?
Well, I don't personally deal with UFO reports directly, really. I have one person locally contact me, but there are a couple of websites that have automatic filing capabilities on the internet, and that's hbccufo.org. I believe you can enter your sightings on there. And then, of course, there's George Filer with Filer's Files. I think if you go onto there, I can't remember the web address for that, but if you just put Filer's Files into Google, he quite often sends out reports from England. I had the bulletin from him earlier in the week, and there's one from Scarborough in the UK. I guess we've got international listeners now, so you know, obviously we're in the UK. But yeah, so Filer's Files, HBCC UFO, you'd be able to put your reports in there.
Okay, there's another one as well, UFOs-aliens.co.uk, which is Andy Lloyd's site, which is also very good.
Right, yes.
Okay, Andy, thank you very much for being my guest on Now That's Weird. It's been a great pleasure talking to you, and I hope you will come back and update us in the future.
I will certainly enjoy doing that, and thank you very much for your time.
That's fantastic. And if you can get onto the ATS forum and answer some questions in there, I'm sure there'll be a few questions being posted for you.
I'll try and do that.
That's fantastic. Andy, thanks for being my guest.
Okay, take care.
Cheers, and you.
Bye.